Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to the United Stand. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news as Michael Carrick plans for the long term and essentially puts in a transfer request for a player he would like to sign. Also, is it stumbling on Kobbie Mainoo? Very interesting updates around him and transfers. Also, a very interesting piece in The Telegraph, again, trying to, I would say, glow up Wilcox in a way that just makes no sense. Basically saying that it didn't matter who the manager was last summer, that Wilcox would have sold Garnacho, Rashford, Sancho. I mean, it's a nonsense, but we'll talk about that as well. Also, who do you think are our three most important players at the moment? I want to talk about that as well. And a few other bits as well. It's match day two as well. It is match day two, because we played at the weekend and we're playing midweek. I can't wait till next season when we're in the Champions League and we're playing two games a week. I'm so fed up with this. Did you see that? I mean, I lost it last night. I absolutely lost it last night. I could not believe it when somebody told me we're not playing for 3 weeks after Bournemouth. So there's an international break. All right. Everybody's got an international break. But when we come back from the international break, it's another bloody FA Cup weekend. We don't play for 3 bloody weeks. This season can get in the bin. I've had enough of it. 3 weeks, and we haven't even booked a bloody friendly in Saudi or something like. We're stupid. We're a stupid football club. I mean, Carrick's probably going to give him a bloody another week off in Dubai. It's so stupid. It gets on my tits, and I didn't even know about it until last night. Also, apparently, our summer tour, we're going to do it in Europe. I mean, have we just stopped making money then, or are we just rinsing fans? I mean, go to Saudi, go to bloody US. You make more bloody money, you idiots. They're meant to be good at bloody making money. Anyway, let's fly into it. Let's look at the first topic, which is going to be Michael Carrick's transfer request. Look, he said he's here for the long term. I disagree with that. I disagree with what he said, by the way, but we'll delve into that in a minute or two. Basically said that no matter whether he's here for the short term or the long term, he's always planning for the long term and the future. I disagree with him on that. I disagree with him on that. But before we get into that, I want to start off by seeing what he said about the left winger market. So this is what he said. Asked about the left wing position for Manchester United. I think there's a better quote than this. I just can't see it. Here it is. Here it is. Here it is. Here it is. He said, on a left winger, it's definitely a point to consider. It's an area that we need to be looking at. He mentioned balance and the importance of having a left winger. He said, yeah, on signing a left winger in the summer, he said, yeah, in certain ways, I think you're always looking at the balance of the team and the squad to give you the utmost flexibility. So it's definitely something to look at for sure. He did go on to say that Cunha can play there in that position and Ahmad too, but adding a left winger is a possibility, yes. So look, he's clearly involved in those summer transfer talks, which I said a couple of weeks ago he does need to be involved in, because even if you don't want Carrick, and I don't at the moment, as I've said, we need to speak to transfer targets now. We do. And if we talk into them now and we're not talking to Carrick about it, then that means it's just Wilcox. And that can't happen. So, look, whether Michael Carrick's going to stay here long-term or not, I do think he needs to be consulted. And I think that that left-wing position is clearly going to be a priority. Now, look, some people think we need a left-back or a right-back as a priority. I think in relation to the left-winger, it's going to be Diamande. That'll be the player that we're looking at the moment at Leipzig. We have held talks. We have been linked to him quite strongly. As soon as we didn't get Semenyo, that was the player that we were linked to. And I think that's where we're going to go. And I think that's the player we're probably going to go for. So it sounds like Carrick has said, yeah, go and get him then, because that's the left winger we're going for. It was only a couple of days ago that we were ruled out of the Everton player. And I'll mispronounce it as I always do. Ngia, is it? We're not going for him. And Anthony Gordon's going to be way too expensive, although we will get to have a look at him tonight. So I think Diamande is the player that we're going to go for. And Michael Carrick there speaking very publicly about United's need for that player. And I do agree with that. I think that I don't think Cunha off the wing really works. I think there is a long-term question to be had about Cunha, but at the moment, he's doing okay, but I don't think that is his best position. I think it's a classic example of you need to start him. So you put him in a position where you can start him, but it's not necessarily his best position. And I think the balance of the team down the left-hand side does look a little bit poor at times. It's really difficult. And It's quite notable, actually, that when you look at the last few games, Statistic Bridge, every decent cross we've put in for Sesko, I think, has come in from the right-hand side. When you look at the Casemiro goal that was offside against West Ham, right-hand side. When you look at the goal from Palace at the weekend, Sesko, right-hand side. We've got people like Bruno and Mainoo who can work situations to put a cross in from that side, but they can't do it on the other side because they're not strong on their left foot. So we do need a little bit more balance. And I think that's what Michael Carrick will be looking at for the summer and saying, look, whether I'm here or not, you do need some more balance down that left-hand side. I think when Dorgu's there, it helps because he's naturally left-footed, and that's quite unusual to use a left-footed player on the left wing. And I do like that. But I think we're going to have to play, you know, I want a left back, and I think we're going to go for a left winger there. So look, Carrick talking about that. I suppose the interesting thing is, and I suppose it comes down to the second part about what he said, is that I don't agree with this, right? And I'll tell you why. Michael Carrick on his future. I love being here and doing what I'm doing. I don't make decisions to get quick short-term results. My responsibility, no matter how long my tenure lasts, is to make the decisions that are best for the club in the long term. Now, a load of people will go, oh, yeah, love that, love that, love that. I love the results. But I think we are playing ridiculously short term, and I think it's been proven in the last three games. I think we are. I don't think he is doing things for the long term at all. I don't know what the style of play is. I know a lot of these players next season won't be good enough. I think by the very nature of the job of being an interim, you have to be short term. And I don't criticise Carrick. I love Michael Carrick, but the definition of being an interim coach is to be short term, and you are being short term. You've reduced training. You've gone back to a style of play that's quite simplistic that these players like. Deep line counter-attack. Under Ollie, we did the same and it was very effective. Predominantly, you're picking experienced players. Obviously, Mainoo's come into the team, but that's because we need an extra midfielder. But you are picking experienced players. I mean, you even had Mbeumo up front and Sesko on the bench. Luke Shaw's at left-back. Deleuze at right-back. It's Maguire and Martinez. So I think that there's nothing wrong with admitting that you've gone short-term, because that's what the only thing that's long-term about Carrick is getting Champions League football. And if that's what he means by that, I completely agree. You know, that the long-term thing is to make sure we get Champions League football to give the club a financial footing to move forward. But I don't think he needs to be saying everything I do is about the long-term, because I don't think it is. You know, you've reduced training, you're giving people more time off, you're picking experienced players, you're playing a back four, which I'm happy with, but you're also playing counter-attacking football. We've simplified a lot. I think we've simplified a lot, and I think that's why we're being successful. These players are simple. I nearly said simpletons. They're not simpletons, but they're clearly quite low IQ in the sense that they couldn't play Ten Hag's football. They couldn't play Amrim's football. I think they like simple instructions and to be pampered. And they have been. And I think Michael Carrick's got that experience from Solskjaer when he was the assistant coach. Then he knew what worked. Like, keep it simple, arm round the shoulder, reduce the training, play 4-3-3, counter, you know, and all those things are working really, really well. But we know it won't work next season. So I disagree. I don't think he is doing things for the long term, because I'm ridiculously happy with where we are at the moment. And hopefully we can capitalise on Liverpool last night by beating Newcastle tonight, which I think we can. But I think there's a lot of United fans that are going, this is great, this is brilliant. But there's very little from what's happening at the moment that you can take into next season. Sesko, obviously, there's some players that are developing. Le Mans, Cunha and Mbeumo have been fantastic. But I don't see a lot of long-term-ism at all. So when he says things like, you know, I'm always looking at the long-term, I don't see anything long-term. And I know I'll get criticised for that because that's the world we live in and I'm absolutely comfortable with it. But I have explained it. And, I don't agree with the comment that I don't make decisions to get short-term results, when I think you have. I think most of what you've done is make decisions to get short-term results. And that's good, because that's your job. You've got a short-term contract as an interim. Interim coaches don't come in and go, Harry, you dropped. Luke Shaw, you dropped. Diego Leon, you're at left back. And Yoro, you're the centre back. And, you know, Bruno, you might be leaving in the summer, so you're out. We're going to play Shea Lacey more. That's long-term. Be stupid to do that. In the short term, he's gone Harry Maguire, Casemiro, Bruno Fernandes down the spine. He's put Luke Shaw at left back. He's gone with experience and people he trusts. We've gone to that sit deep and counter at style of football that works so well against Arsenal and Manchester City. And in the last three games, we have struggled. I think the intensity has dropped. So I think that it's almost, some people would say, well, why are you even saying this? Well, if you listen, you'll get to that point. The reason I'm saying this, the reason I'm adamant he's not doing anything that's really long term, is because if he was, that's what would flip me towards giving him the job. Like I literally have said over the last couple of weeks, one of the big reasons I wouldn't give Carrick the job is that in the quest for PRV, performance, results and vision, we're definitely getting results. In the first two games, I saw performance, but I think that's dropped. And the vision, I'm not sure what it is. So if Carrick wants the job, then he needs to talk the talk, walk the walk of doing things in the long term, because I want to see performance and vision before I even jump on that bandwagon, if I'm being honest. But we are getting results, I would say that. Many people don't realise how idiotic it was from the club to let the players go to Dubai on holiday mid-season. Imagine if the current situation happened a week earlier, the players would be stuck, says Ab Alex. I never really thought of it like that. Look, last night, just before we move on to other topical stuff, that result last night for us was absolutely fantastic. I watched it. I was doing it on That's Football, which is why we did the earlier show here. And there was this feeling that maybe Wolves could get something. I think Wolves, probably since Christmas and since Edwards came in, have started to get better and better. I mean, look, they got a draw out of us at Old Trafford, which was probably because we didn't have Mbeumo and Ahmad, if we're being completely honest. But they were better than they were at the start of the month. And they've drawn against Arsenal at home. They've beaten Villa and now they've beaten Liverpool. So the context of that is so good for us, because if you look at it now, we're almost in free hit territory. We have got some difficult games, Bournemouth away, Chelsea away. We've got to play Liverpool at Old Trafford. So we have got some difficult games, but by the time they come along, we're already in a really good position. I mean, I'm looking at the game tonight between Chelsea and Villa, and I'm like, draw, maybe even a Villa win. And I know that might mean we go Villa a joint with us, but I feel like we know Villa are going to drop points anyway, and we've got to play them at home. And I don't know whether it's a bad take or a good take, but there's a part of me that's like, I'd like Villa to beat Chelsea, us to beat Newcastle, and then we're both 9 points ahead of Chelsea. They don't come back from that with us. They might come back from, they might do a nine point gap with Villa, but they won't come back from it with us. And I think Villa are going to drop points when the Europa League kicks in next week. So, and remember, we play Villa at home 3 days after they've played Thursday night football again. So we're probably going to beat Villa at home. There's a very high chance that we're going to beat Villa at home, because we're at home after a week and a half rest and they're playing 3 days after Europa League. So part of me tonight's like, I don't want Chelsea to win, because that sixth place is the trapdoor, isn't it? And whoever's in that sixth place or fifth place, I want them to keep losing. So Liverpool losing last night, 3 points behind us, game in hand, win tonight, 6 points on Liverpool, will at least be 6 points ahead of Chelsea. That's a great position to be in. So yeah, last night was incredibly good for us. Incredibly good. Who do you think the left winger is? Diamande. Diamande, I said it to you, we had some info, was it 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, that's the player that United are actually working on at the moment. He's the player that United are working on more than any other player at the moment. They can't work on Anderson. They're not working on Stiller. Belaba's sort of there in the background, but Diamande is the player that they're putting the most work in on at the moment. And I would presume that's still the case, simply because they wanted Semenyo and they didn't get him. And they instantly pivoted to Diamande, who they've got very good relationships with anyway, but also they've got good relationships with Leipzig after the summer. Favel's very respected there. So it will be Diamande. I'm not saying we're 100% signing him, but he will be the player that United are working on. And that will be the player that's been presented to Carrick that Favel and Wilcox are happy with as well. So it will be Diamande. And I'm not, it'd be a very exciting player. And I'm not opposed to buying players under 22. I just think we buy too many of them. But in the balance of the attack that we have, Ahmad's experienced now, Mbeumo's experienced, Cunha's experienced, Bruno's experienced, Sesko's getting more experienced. I think we can afford to bring in a younger winger. I don't think that's the area where we need experience. I think experience is needed in the fullbacks and in the midfield. But Diamande would be... will be the player that we're looking at. And I would agree with that. Compare Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Carrick does show more composure and feels like the team shows more respect. Quite surprising given the situation. Win tonight for United, says Seth. Thank you very much for your super chat, Seth. AMG says, I'm finally able to catch a live show. Tough one to call tonight. Draw, not a bad shout. Win would be huge considering we have Villa next. Well, and I think we will beat Villa. As I said, we're catching Villa at a really good time, but also we'll have had a week off and they'll have played on Thursday night. So I think Villa is a great time to catch them, which is why, as I say, part of me is like, I hope Villa win against Chelsea tonight. I don't want Chelsea to win tonight. I think if Chelsea win tonight, it still keeps that, you know, door open because we've got to play Chelsea. If you assume we won't win at Stamford Bridge, which we might do, but if you assume we don't, then really, if you assume that Chelsea are going to beat us, they're only 3 points behind us at the moment. So if they win tonight, you know, and we win, it's 3 points, isn't it? But I'd like a bigger gap than that. With regards to the game tonight, I do think it will be a draw. But if someone's going to win it, it'll be us. Newcastle, they're just not playing like... I mean, unless they turn up and play like they haven't played for weeks, they're not playing like that at the moment. Keel Robinson says the long term is not rushing into the flavour of the month manager. Decide on how we want to play, then getting the right person, says Keel. Thank you very much. Irish Whiskey is still laughing at Liverpool's defeat last night. Abank says many people don't realise how idiotic I've done that one, haven't I? Nobody going to Saudi right now, says Chris Toffer. Yeah, well, exactly. Those friendlies aren't going to happen in Saudi, to be fair. Middle East geopolitics could make a difference to how the summer market and events pan out in all kinds of way, says DWG. And absolutely agree, should be speaking to players now, says Laura Baxter. Hope you're doing well. OK, let me just move on to something else that's a little bit more about transfers. So this came out last night from the... where did it come out? I think it was the Daily Mail. And I can't find it now. What? You know what? I bloody hate X at times. You know when you hit a like on something, it should go into your likes. And it hasn't. I found it. It has. Sorry, X. There are still, this is from the Daily Mail. There are still lingering issues between Maynooth's camp and United hierarchy after he agreed to a compromise on his new salary and then didn't hear back from United until Amrin was fired in January. Maynooth earns significantly less than his teammates and it's unclear if his representatives would be willing to accept the same terms now he has underlined his importance to the team since Carrick came in. He's said to be far more settled than he was in the summer. There is now considerably more chance of him staying at Old Trafford and signing a new long-term contract if the two sides can reach an agreement again. So, look, I think the Maynooth situation is somewhat complicated now because I think that he was willing to sign reduced terms when Amrin was here because he wasn't part of the first team. However, he is now flavour of the month. He's starting every single game. He has a chance to be going to the World Cup, of course. But that strengthens his hand in contract negotiations. So the Maynooth contract's really interesting. I think it will get signed. I don't think there's any concern about that. I think he's always wanted to be at Manchester United and he's now starting for Manchester United. I think the issue will be just how much money he asks for and how much he actually gets. I mean, look, in the context of starting for Manchester United, you shouldn't be on 50 grand a week. So the point is, where do Man United pitch it? If he's pitching at 150 grand a week, is he wrong? Is he right? Will Man United give it him? We'll have to wait and see. Gene says, I hope he's not being greedy. I mean, I don't really care. I don't really care. I think the point is, you've got to get him on a contract. And we've wasted a lot of time on this Maynooth contract. Personally, I think it should have been done a year ago. And we probably could have got it done a little bit cheaper a year ago. I don't really care if Maynooth's asking for 150 grand a week because contextually he can say things like Bruno's on 300 grand a week, Casemiro's on 300 grand a week, Ugarte's on 150 grand a week, Eriksen was on 150 grand a week, I'm starting in the midfield for Man United, I want 150 grand a week. So I think he can ask for that. Some of you would say he's not worth it, but I think he can ask for that justifiably. Whether he can get that or not, I don't know. What he'd sign below that, I don't know. I think maybe you do something like 125k and you revisit it in 18 months or something like that. But I think that as much as some people say he's not worth this, he's not worth that, the reality is he's clearly a starter in a midfield three for Manchester United at the moment. We know that Casemiro's leaving as well, which strengthens his hand even more. And we don't know who we're signing in the summer. So with Maynou, he's in a really strong position now because he's literally probably the only midfielder that we've got guaranteed for next season. And we don't know what we're getting. So I think United have got to, you know, they've got to put something fair on the table. That's what I would say. I don't think it's greedy. I think it's got to be something fair. Mojo says, with all the talk about signings picking up, how much do you think we'll raise through player sales? Because qualifying for the Champions League alone will not provide for the funds required in the summer, says Mojo. Financials are always really difficult, Mojo, because you just don't know how it's going to play out in the sense of we just don't know. We just don't know whether United have got a big lump of money to spend. We know we can spend above £200 million. The financial rules say that we can. Whether we will or not, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I certainly think that from what I'm hearing and also from recent history, it's really going to kick off in March. And I know it's March now, but I don't mean now. I mean the March international break. It always does. And I think it really will, because I know for a fact from a couple of players, nothing to do with Man United. Obviously, I've got, you know, players who follow me on Instagram and I speak to every now and again. A couple of them are like in a situation where they might be moving in the summer. And look, it's all confidential, but I'm really interested in transfers. Always have been since I was a kid, doing the bloody newspaper rounds and going on the school bus like a Romano, going this, that and the other, or looking at teletext. And I do ask a lot of questions. I used to ask Ben Foster about it a lot as well. Contracts, when people start talking to you, you know, do players have these minimum games starting, sort of things like that. Well, I know a couple of players that might be on the move in the summer. Again, neither are United and neither are United targets. And one of them said to me, look, already my agent is in talk with four clubs. And that was 2 weeks ago. So we are talking to Diamande. I don't know that for a fact, but we are talking to Diamande. We will be talking to players now. And in the March international break, I think it will start to come out more and more, because it was last year when we had the exclusive that Delap, it was like literally the first week of April, Delap. March international break, I think, is when the transfer window starts. And I think even more so this year because of the World Cup. There's a lot of clubs that know they're going to have to wait till after the World Cup. But there's also a lot of players that won't wait until after the World Cup. And there'll be a lot of clubs that don't want to wait till after the World Cup. Just because your player's in the World Cup doesn't mean you necessarily want to wait till after the World Cup to sell them, because there's not a lot of time and you might miss the boat. In the sense of someone like, I don't even know if he's going to the World Cup, but somebody like Anthony Gordon, if he's going to leave Newcastle, then you don't really need to wait until after the World Cup, because he might not even start for England and he might not have a real amazing World Cup. And if Newcastle sell him late, like they did with Isak, they leave themselves with very little time to do anything. So an Anthony Gordon deal makes sense to do it before the World Cup. And there will be big deals done before the World Cup. And for that to happen, people need to be in talks now. So I think with United, I don't expect us just to wait until after the World Cup. I think we'll be doing something before that. Yeah. Glenn says, understand your point of view, but we ended up writing off end of last season to build a future. I think any new managers on are hiding to nothing in the summer, says Glenn. Yeah, but look, you know, I think this is... this to me is why... And there's a really interesting piece in The Telegraph about sales from last summer that I want to bring in. But this to me is why, when I mentioned my dream yesterday, my dream scenario is that we bring in Nagelsmann. Because Favel will know what Nagelsmann's all about. And Favel will be able to get those players in before Nagelsmann even arrives. I think if you go for Carrick or De Zerbi, Favel doesn't have that relationship with them. And also, you're relying on Wilcox. And it becomes a little bit more puppetry. It's almost like Michael or Roberto, you've got the job and this is what I've bought for you because this is what I think's right. Whereas I think if you go Nagelsmann, he comes in and Favel goes, look what I've got you, because I know this will work for you. That's why I'd like that situation. And the reason I say that is because we have got to buy blind. We can't wait for the manager until even July, in my opinion, and then start buying players. There's got to be, you know, an acceptance that we need to be buying players before the World Cup. And I think if you buy Elliot Anderson and you buy Diamande and you buy Stiller and you buy Lewis Hall, I don't think there's a manager in football that's going to walk in and go, I can't believe you've done that, you bloody idiots, I'm leaving. You know, I think if you buy players like that, it doesn't matter who your manager is, whether it's Enrique, Nagelsmann or even Carrick. I think if you buy players like that, people are going to go, that's fine. But I think if you buy players like Baleba and João Gomez and Carrick or Nagelsmann get the job, they're sort of like, you know, I might have gone for somebody else. So there we go. Drip Football says Nagelsmann has done nothing. He's another Amrin. Thanks for your opinion, mate. Completely disagree with it. And it's all about opinion. Morning, Mark. Thank you very much from AMG. I've done that one. Anyway, I wanted to just talk about this, but I've got a couple of super chats. Easy Life says, morning, Mark. Could Anderson be the new Calvin Phillips? If he goes to City, where he could be a squad player, unlike us, where he'd be a starter. He's better than Calvin Phillips. He's better than Calvin Phillips. Cameron says, is Mark being paid by Nagelsmann? No, it's just a preference, mate. And you know, you're entitled to your preference, but what I would say is that you can't really knock me for wanting Nagelsmann based on his CV compared to Michael Carrick, whose CV is Middlesbrough and, you know, 6 weeks at Man United. I think at least I'm going for somebody that's got an identical style of play and a CV with good and bad bits in it. And also a relationship with our director of football. Well, the guy who should be our director of football. I've seen this as well, Giovanni. I'm glad you said this. Turn Xerxes into a midfielder. No. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking Joel Linton. I mean, I'll digress for like 30 seconds. Who in their right mind thinks Xerxes is a midfielder from watching him? Like, he's not quick. He doesn't tackle. He's not physical enough. He is not a midfielder. Turn Xerxes into a midfielder. We may as well turn Harry Maguire into a winger. At least he's got a few skills. I know Xerxes got skills, but what I'm saying is Xerxes hasn't got any midfield skills. Absolutely none. No. Why have we got so many accountants in the chat? Just pay Manu and get on with it. No one here would just take what they get offered at a job, says Lee Cape Town. I know, exactly. Again, I think the people saying that Manu's only worth 100k a week are the same people who knock one out to the wage bill coming down. I just don't get it. I don't really care if we give Manu 150k a week. I don't really care if we give Bruno 400 grand a week, because ultimately you get what you pay for. It's funny, again, doing my Baller League team, we came into it so late and you have two franchise players, four designated players and then six ballers, and they're all on different pay scales. Now, I had to do things to get certain things. Because I came into it so late, to get some players, I probably had to go a little bit higher than I wanted to on some players. But ultimately, they're good players. So I have to do it. Otherwise, I don't get them. It's the same in football. You can't just look at Elliot Anderson and go, well, we're not giving you more than 200 grand a week. Well, I'll sign for City for 250 then. You don't get that player. You lose. Does Carrick not remind you of a younger version of Southgate? Says Eold. Don't say that. That will put me right off him. With all the talk about... I've done that one from Mojo as well. Right. They just need to stop messing around and go for it. Sign high priority positions and get on with it. It's not that hard, really. Don't get why all these business people try these dumb ideas, says the Recon guy. And Jason says, you've mentioned you would take Pochettino over Carrick. Why? He's been mediocre at best since leaving Spurs. And for the US, he's been quite poor. Again, better CV, decent style of play. I'm not convinced by Carrick. But look, Carrick can convince me by playing tonight and playing well. What I want to see is those Man City and Arsenal performances that got us all really excited. I don't think we've been very exciting the last few games, so tonight is an opportunity. I want to just see us playing some good football. I don't want to see us grinding out football, you know? Pedro Porro at right back would be perfect, says Spencer. I think he would. I think he would. I think that's a very good shout. Xerxes is good enough to share minutes as a false nine, says Class of 99. And Slazy says, Xerxes is a futsal player, great touch and skills. The pitch is just too big for him. And Rajav says, Anderson, Stiller and Scott would be my three midfielders. Well, I wouldn't mind that. Nagelsmann also used a three back with Germany, Leipzig and Hoffenheim. Not saying to go back to it, but could be good to have a tactical, flexible manager, says the Huncho. Yeah, but look, I think that tactical flexibility is good for any manager. And Carrick at times did play with the three at the back for Middlesbrough. So look, you know, tactical flexibility is very good. But I reiterate what Recon Guy is saying and what I'm saying as well. I really do think that we can't wait for the manager to make signings. We can't do that. We have to go out and make signings without the manager, because if we don't, we're going to miss out. So, but that's absolutely fine as long as you're signing players of the quality of Elliot Anderson and Xerxes and maybe a Stiller. Like, I'd be worried if we were buying shit. I can't understand why we're going for another left winger. We have Dorgu and Cunha for the left, then Ahmad and Mbeumo on the right, says Raymond. I don't think that's good enough on the left hand side, really. And I don't think that those four are good enough for Premier League, Champions League next year. I think we need another winger. I think we need a proper winger. Diesel says, people are sleeping on Tyler Adams. He's decent. Thank you very much for that. Right. There was something I wanted to bring in because I thought this was really, really strange. A really, really strange piece that came out from The Telegraph today. We've also got an update on Martinez and Mason Mount from Michael Carrick. I'll do that first, then I'll talk about this Telegraph thing. So Carrick on Martinez and Mason Mount. This came out in his second part of his interview, not in the press conference yesterday. So it came in overnight. Any positive update on Martinez? Not particularly, really. No, he won't be with us for the game against Newcastle. He's not quite ready for that. We've got one or two. We're trying to get work to get them back. Mason Mount as well. He's getting a bit closer. So unfortunately, it's part of the game. There's always going to be people out. There's always going to be people missing. But we'll keep working hard as we can to get them back. Look, all I would say is, like, Mason Mount has effectively been out for over a month again now. And we never get told what the injury is with Mason Mount, either, do we? It's funny because there was some story about Mason Mount being sold, and then I read something this morning that Man United won't be letting Mason Mount go this summer because they've got Champions League football next year and they need a big squad. Roughly translated, nobody's fucking stupid enough to buy him, so we're going to pretend that he's a decent squad player. I mean, have you ever heard such shite in all your life? We're not going to sell him because we need him for the squad for the Champions League. Bullshit. You're not going to sell him because nobody's stupid enough to give you money and give him 250 grand a week. You got absolutely mugged off by Chelsea. You've been absolutely rinsed, and now you're pretending that he's a decent squad player. The guy is broken. Absolutely broken. It's very sad because I think he's a nice lad and I think he's a decent player when he's fit, but he never should have got through the medical and we never should have signed him. He had this issue at Chelsea. In the last few months, he had this issue at Chelsea, and Man United, like the bloody idiots they are, went two-footed into the challenge again, and now they've got a red card. It's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. 250 grand a week and £60 million for a player that had 1 year left on his contract and had an underlying injury issue. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And he's not going to be going anywhere, is he? Somebody messaged me the other day and said, you do realise that this season he's had six separate injuries. And I went, six? We barely had 6 months in the bloody season. August, September, October, November, December, January, February. We're only just starting March. So he's averaging an injury a month. And that's not forgetting the last 2 months. I mean, you can't transfer. If you try and upload Mason Mount's injury record on Transfer Market, it crashes the system. They can't deal with it. There's too many pages. I'm actually going to do it now. That was a joke. But I don't think that I looked at it. I looked at Mason Mount's injury record on Transfer Market. It's not even accurate. They don't actually put all his injuries in. Because they've got in there at the moment, they've only got him being injured three times this season. And he's definitely been injured double that. So they don't even put all his injuries in. In fact, if you look at his injury record on Transfer Market, I reckon that's only half true. There's definitely, according to that, he's only had seven injuries for Man United in 3 years. I think he's had nearly seven this season. So they don't, it's not even accurate. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. As for Martinez, look, I think with Martinez, it was always going to be 2 or 3 weeks. He's missed the last two games, hasn't he? And there was talk of him being back for Palace, but he's not. He'll be back for Villa. I think he'll be back for the Villa game. And we've got to be careful with Martinez anyway, because he is coming back from a very serious injury, and you're always going to get secondary injuries, muscular. So I just think with Martinez, we've got to be a little bit careful. Sharing Holmes says Mason Mount wearing the number 7 is criminal. Yeah, you've sort of put me in a bad mood now. I forgot about that. I mean, what idiot gave him the number 7 shirt as well? We've had some right prats wear the number 7 shirt since Ronaldo left. But that has got to be the equivalent of wiping your arse on it. I mean, I don't get why he got the number 7 shirt. You know, this is always my big issue with Manchester United Football Club, right? There's some really intelligent people in the fan base who get what the club's all about. Loads of you. But in the club itself, they're morons. Like, they're factually morons. They've got... And their biggest issue is they don't... I don't think they're Man United... Well, they're not Man United people. Jason Wilcox is not a Man United person. Berarda's not a Man United person. Even Favel, they're not Man United people. They don't get it. And one of the things about Liverpool and Man United is it's a thing. It's a thing. Like, there's things about Man United and Liverpool that are, you know, it's a thing. You've got to support the club to know what the thing is. You don't just hand the number 7 shirt to a Chelsea player for a start. And, yeah, he never should have got... That number 7 shirt has been so abused over the last 10 years. It's incredible. It's incredible how we've diminished the number 7. I mean, this is what I mean. At Real Madrid, they wouldn't do it. That number 7 shirt at Manchester United is iconic. George Best, David Beckham, Ronaldo, Brian Robson, Eric Cantona. It is iconic. And we've apps, and for a club that's about brand, not football, that number 7 shirt, imagine how much more money they could have made out of that number 7 shirt as well. I mean, Bruno should be wearing it. Bruno should be number 7 for Man United. He should have been number 7 years ago. And you can be number 7 where he plays. Cantona wasn't a winger. You can be, Brian Robson wasn't a winger. You can be number 7. Bruno should have worn the number 7. And the club have fucked up big time, because it's such an iconic shirt and number. And we've absolutely fucked it up. I mean, if I was in the board for marketing, I'd say, what are we doing about the number 7 shirt? It's one of the most famous shirts in world football, and we've basically retired it. Why do we keep giving it to stupid players like Di Maria and Alexis Sanchez and Mason Mount? And when I say stupid players, it's not personal to them. I'm just saying, like, even Memphis, like, we just hand it to the wrong people all the time. And they're always releasing new training tops, this, that and the other. But the number 7 shirt could actually be something from a brand point of view, but more importantly, from a fan point of view, that makes us... You know, it's that tie between the club and the fans. Bruno should be wearing the number 7. Imagine if Bruno turned up every game with the number 7 on it. It should have happened. Pranab says, you wanted to talk about Le Mans yesterday. I can't remember what it was. I tell you what I can say about Le Mans, though. I was thinking about this. Somebody said this to me the other day. They said, who do you think are the 3 most important players for Manchester United at the moment? And everybody's going to have a different 3. But for me, the 3 most important players for Man United at the moment are Le Mans, Bruno and Sesko. And people are going to lose it. They're going to go mad. What about Mainoo? What about Casemiro? What about Harry Maguire? What about Mbeumo? What about Cunha? But they're right here, right now. Those 3 players are the most important players for me, because Sesko scores the goals, which wins the games or draws the games. Bruno is just incredible in relation to his input and output. And Le Mans' stability at the back is making us not concede goals. So those 3, I'm not saying they're our best 3 players, But they're our three most important players at the moment. One's scoring the goals, one's stopping the goals, and one's the captain and, you know, focal point of the team. So I would say those three at the moment are our three most important players. Not saying they're our best players, but they're our three most important players right here, right now. At this stage of the season, it is just about results. As we've seen in the last three games, I don't think we've played particularly well in the last three games, but we've won two and drawn one. And a lot of that, when you look at Everton, Le Mans, when you look at the last three games, Sesko goals, when you look at Bruno. So I think those three, for me, are our most important players at the moment. I can't remember what I was going to say about Le Mans. Can't remember what I was going to say last night, which is why you should always just get on with it. I think it was probably something down the line of when we brought him in and he got into the team because Bienda and Onana were crap, it was almost like a free hit because we had nobody else. He came into the team and it was going to be an audition from autumn until the end of the season and then make a decision of whether he's going to be our first choice goalkeeper or our backup goalkeeper. And I remember that was the situation and everybody agreed. We don't want Bienda in goal. Anana's gone, quite rightly. So Le Mans has got this period of time to be under audition. And the pressure's not really there because everybody wanted to give him a go. I think where we are now, he's got the job, hasn't he? I think back in the autumn, it was like, maybe he will be, maybe we'll buy a better goalkeeper. I think where we are now, we do need to bring a goalkeeper in, but it's definitely a backup. He is the number one. Reminds me of De Gea. When he first came in. Young goalkeeper with the right attitude. And I'm sure there will be some mistakes along the way. But for me, he is the guy to go with now. I think he's passed the audition. I think that's what I was going to say. Maliki says, do you think Carrick can be like Arteta for Arsenal? No, I don't. The seven should go back in the locker after Mount leaves. Should only be given when a special player arrives. Someone like Ronnie, says Rajaf. Look, that's a bit blunt about Carrick, but I agree with Rajaf as well. The number seven shirt shouldn't just be given out to anybody. It should be kept back. And it should go to players that have proven themselves. Giving the number seven shirt to a new signing is dangerous because you're using it as a reason to sign for the club. And we shouldn't do that. Feels to me like with some of the people we've given the number seven shirt to, it was almost like, if you come here, we'll give you that. We should never use the number seven shirt like that. It's too iconic. If we said to Memphis, sign for us because you can have the number seven shirt, or Di Maria or Sanchez or Mount, that's piss poor. Shouldn't be used as an incentive. It should be used as a reward for actually being a Man United player. Why can't Carrick be Arteta? Well, he can, but I think people are just running away with it. I think it's way too soon, as I've said before. Anderson, Onana, Scott, Kiode, Diouf, Hall, Mane, says Jack. I don't want that Kiode. He can piss off with his long throws. I do not want Kiode. Not unless he's going to get banned from long throw-ins. I don't want no long ball, long fucking throw-in merchant. No, absolutely not. I don't want anybody who can throw the ball long. If Michael Carrick banned us from doing that forever, he can have the job. I don't want to see it. I hate it. I hate long throw-ins. Even Valencia was given the number seven and gave it back, says LC. I remember there was rumours that Sancho was promised the seven, but then Ronnie came back and was given it, says Glenn C. I thought Sancho did have the number seven. Justin says, cheers, Mark. Here's to half a century of being a subscribed member. Thank you very much, mate. You're a legend. Looking forward to the watch along with you and your team tonight. I can't wait to be playing tonight. Can't wait to see that. Keel Robinson says, did you see Garnacho's apology to United fans? What? Oh, Sancho won number 20 and wore number 25. Garnacho apology? No. Haven't seen that. I'm surprised I haven't seen that because there's plenty of people that. The Garnacho apology was AI, apparently. He won't be. I don't think he's the sort of person who would apologise. Anyway, let me talk to you about this Telegraph thing because I've been holding this back. So this, to me, is complete and utter Wilcox PR. Listen to this. Listen to this. From James Ducker in the Telegraph. Senior sources at Old Trafford. Well, straight away. Thank you, James Ducker. We don't even need to do any guesswork. Senior sources at Old Trafford. Senior sources. Wilcox. Senior sources at Old Trafford maintain that Marcus Rashford, Garnacho, Antony and Sancho would have been shipped out in some form or another, regardless of the situation with Ruben Amorim. Now, I'm sorry. Bullshit. Why is it 2 months on from sacking Amorim, Wilcox is still desperately trying to make himself look good to the fans? Mate, it's not just sacking Amorim. You wanted to get Delap. There's loads of mistakes you've made. You've not bought a midfielder in two transfer windows. Stop thinking if you shit on Amorim, people are going to like you. It's bigger than that. You've messed up on loads of things. It's not just that. And I think it's laughable to even try and put it out there that regardless of Amorim, you'd have sold Garnacho or Rashford or Antony. Because you wouldn't. You wouldn't. All three of them were first team players under Erik ten Hag. And Amorim came in and dropped Rashford and Garnacho in the first 2 weeks he was there for a Manchester derby and never gave Antony a chance. So we know Antony, Garnacho and Rashford are out of Man United because of Amorim. And if he hadn't been the manager, they would still be playing. So stop trying to claim stuff that you didn't do. Garnacho left because he fell out with bloody Amorim. Simple as that. Rashford left because he fell out with Amorim and wanted a new challenge. And Antony left because he couldn't get any game time. Stop trying to rewrite history to make yourself look like you're good at your job. You wanted us to sign Liam Delap. That's all anybody ever talks about when it comes to Wilcox. But again, but you know what? In a way, I'm glad I left it to the end because it's totally irrelevant. Why is it senior sources at Man United are still leaking to their journalists about stuff to try and undermine Amorim? I just find it weird. Amorim's not even the manager anymore. He's not the manager anymore. We should be looking forward, not backwards. If somehow we win the Premier League, what will happen? If somebody wants to talk about Man United winning the Premier League this season, that's absolutely fine. I'm not going to do it. Go all in for Anderson, lock that and move to the next, says Amit. And what if Carrick goes unbeaten until the end of the season and we finish top four, says Joker. Oh, God, does anybody else get bored of me being asked about what circumstances it would take for me to, say, give Michael Carrick the job? I mean, I'm bored of it. I'm so bored of it. At the moment, it's a flat no. A flat no. I don't think the football's been good enough the last few weeks. I think he has simplified things to a point where it's not going to be sustainable next season. I think we're playing counter-attacking, deep back four football with players that won't be able to do that next season on a sustainable level. I think we need to see performance and vision. I want to go back to seeing what I saw against Man City and Arsenal. Hopefully we can see that tonight. If you want a hypothetical situation where I'll give Michael Carrick the job, and I don't give him the job, by the way, I want to see really good football between now and the end of the season. You know, I want to see a vision that goes beyond people like Luke Shaw and Delo. And obviously, it depends on who is available for the job. I'm sorry, if Nagelsmann or Enrique become available for this job, Michael Carrick can win every single game between now and the summer and he doesn't get the job for me. If it's going to be De Zerbi or Southgate or Glasner and Carrick does well till the end of the season, I'll give it to Carrick. So you're talking hypotheticals, but there is a scenario. But what I will say is, if De Zerbi, Southgate and Glasner are the best managers we can attract in the summer, then Wilcox should be sacked because, hold on a minute, this is one of the most viable jobs in world football and the best you can do is a sacked Marseille manager, a Crystal Palace manager and a Pratt. We should have high-end coaches wanting this job. That's what we should have. And then you make your decision on that. Thank you very much for that. Not for his throw-ins. I think Kyode is a good player, says Jay. Yeah, but it doesn't matter whether he's a good player, because every time there's a throw-in, he'll be pushing people out the way with his towel and going, let's launch it. And I don't want to see that. I really, really don't. How about Simeone? I'm not a big fan of Simeone's style of football. I mean, it has improved a little bit, but I'm not a huge fan of it, to be honest with you. No. Thoughts on the game tonight, Mark? Look, I'm on top of the world. Like, I can't believe that after the Bournemouth game, it's 3 weeks until we play again. It's just crazy to me. And that just sort of brings it home. And look, that at that time, there'll be so much going on with transfers that it will still be interesting. But it's just this season's been so hard. The lack of games is just, it's definitely had an impact on my, I don't want to use the word mental health, but mood. I find it so criminal how few games Man United have played this season. And that reflects on Amrin. It also reflects massively on the board. But that's last season, isn't it? Nothing that's happened this season impacts on Europe. It was last season. And that Europa League final where the players couldn't be arsed. So having this game tonight just shows us what it's going to be like from September next year. Like, it's going to be Christmas from August. Like, knowing that we're going to play so many games next season, because I think the lack of games is just a killer. So I'm really excited about the game tonight. We played on Sunday and we're playing tonight. I think it's the last midweek game we've got this season, actually, which is embarrassing. I think this is the last midweek game Man United have got this season in early March. We've got no more midweek games as things stand. I don't think we have. There's no more midweek Premier League fixtures. So it's an embarrassing season. And, you know, it's not Carrick's fault. It's more Amrin's fault. And it's definitely the board's fault. But yeah, apparently we have got Bournemouth on a Friday. But yeah, I mean, that's not midweek, is it really? Okay, thank you everybody for tuning in. Yeah, so match day tonight, we will be live with you from... I might start a little bit earlier tonight because we've got the Chelsea Villa game. So I might start at 7:30. So I might ask them to start the fan forum a little bit earlier. But I'm going to start my show at 7:30 so that I can watch the first half of Villa Chelsea with you. But our kickoff is 8:15. Thanks everybody for watching. Fantastic show this morning. Really enjoyed it. Make sure you've smashed a like on the video, nearly 1,000 likes. And if you haven't subscribed, please do. I'll see you all later. Midweek game under the lights. Bring it on. Take care.